This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Pass, top of the far circle. Quinn gets it back again. Shot's not there. Joki Haru scored from here in the tournament. Scores! He did it again! Henry Joki Haru!
It's a game winner for Henry, and the Sabres continue to roll on home ice. Now they have a brief getaway to Raleigh. They'll leave this afternoon, take on the Canes tomorrow. But Marty and company, welcome in. It is on the heels of another, well, certainly a big offensive period, and that was the final period for Buffalo that allowed them to skate away with another win and boost the home numbers. My goodness, I mean, in this winning 6 of 7 overall, and all 6 of those wins coming on home ice, they outscored their opponents 29-14 in the 6 wins. It's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive. And yes, look, the first period was really good. I felt like it was a bit on the perimeter. And, you know, the second period got away from them a little bit. Especially, you know, penalty, give up a power play goal again, and you're down 2-0. Not the same attack mentality. There was some good moments, but not the same push, especially in the zone. But in the third period, they attacked, so that was good. Oh, before we go, I've got a note here.
Are we almost done?
And we're almost done. Yeah, before we leave, that's a 2-minute show. You know, you said good afternoon, Marty and company. Company yesterday stopped by the set, and this gentleman stopped by the set and says, Marty, I got the same problem you do right now with the landmines in the backyard. So I was listening to the show and I was laughing. I'm not the only one. So that was
how's his Wi-Fi?
I know. Well, probably good. Yesterday we didn't make it through the first segment. We're hoping to have a clean game today, this afternoon, Duffer.
Oh man. The unexpected start to any show, and long may it last. We try. You may not think this, but we do try to not talk about the same thing every day. And Lindy Ruff was able to give us something a little bit different, partly out of necessity. Score effect, banged up Yuri Kulik. So the lines changed. And also the pairings changed in the third period, as part of what you said was an attacking third period. Let's dive in a little bit. I mean, here we are seeing up front Thompson in the third period between Greenway and Tuck. What do the numbers tell us? What did the eye test tell us last night? Is there any likelihood that we see more of this moving forward?
Well, the numbers from last night alone, I thought were really good. And look, this is what you have to do as a coach. You feel like your team deserves a better fate after 40 minutes, but you're still down 2-0. And right now it's playoff mode and you got to move things around. And unfortunately for Yuri Kulik, who got hit in the face playing with a bubble, and You know, it's, look, he's a young kid. He'll adjust. Like, there was a couple of shots of him on the bench where he looked like, oh, this was, he was struggling physically. So you're like, okay, you know,
but
we don't have
you
to.
You remember that, right? Like, yeah, okay. You had mask issues where you literally told Teppo you couldn't see anything, right?
Yeah, oh, and yeah. I think, but and playing with guys that get hit, especially in the face, what happens is it's painful. The breathing becomes hard, and then you have to put a full bubble on. And a lot of guys have not played with a full bubble for over a decade. And then it's like, I can't breathe. And I get out there for 10 seconds.
It's vision seconds just as much, though, which sounds crazy, right, for some, because it's not like it's funny because so many of us grew up playing with a cage, but it doesn't really matter whether it's a cage or a bubble. It's your eyesight that has changed. And if you can't connect the dots to hand eye at the pace,
the pace.
Oh my gosh. It's,
and even Dan Danivi pointed out a couple of times, like, it looks like Yuri was having a tough time handling the puck. So there was not just the, oh, I can't breathe and my mouth is hurting and all of that. Then you don't feel like you have the same execution level that you need to have to be able to be productive. So, you know, the third period start, and, you know, we see Greenway, Thompson, and Tuck. Thompson back to the middle. Funny enough, we talked about it on the show yesterday, is, well, what if you put Thompson back to the middle at some point and then look for, you know, a big-name winger? I mentioned Mikko Rantanen yesterday, and I'm like, what if Mikko Rantanen was to play with Tage Thompson? You know, and, you know, we're going to see Rantanen with Carolina tomorrow. So, anyway.
Unless he gets traded before then.
Unless they make, well, maybe we're going to see him on the Sabre side tomorrow. You never know.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to start that rumor. I mean, but I... It was
okay, 2 days
those...
in a row you've said it. So what is it? Are you trying to start it or not?
I'm saying if he is going to be on the move, maybe that would be something the Sabres could do. But so not knowing that Tage Thompson was going to be asked to play center yesterday in the third period, I thought Tage was flying throughout the game. And he's been flying for many games. But can you take that same pace that you've had on the wing and apply it to the middle? And I think Alex Tuck is a guy that can skate really well and can push the pace. And obviously, Thompson and Tuck have had a lot of success together as a line 2 years ago and some of last year. And now you add Jordan Greenway. And it became a very big, very physical line that when they were on the ice yesterday, it was only for about 5 minutes of five-on-five time. Well, everything
was... Which, just so people know, I mean, that's a pretty standard number for one period, because when you factored in, and there weren't power play time, you know, you'd be talking about 6-7 minutes for these top two guys in Thompson and Tuck, which is absolutely on average what you would play on a nightly basis.
Yeah, you figure, like, this obviously natural stat trick, calculate the time on ice when they're all three on the ice. If you have a line change in the middle of play, Thompson jumps on the ice. He's on the ice for 78 seconds, then Greenway, then Tuck. Maybe they only play 33, 34, 35 seconds together, because so you're looking at this and you say, okay, that's about, you know, under just about 5 minutes, it's probably 8 or 9 shifts, or maybe 7 or 8 shifts together. Well, 7 or 8 shifts in a period is a good number when you roll three lines in a third period like Lindy Ruff was doing for most of the part. But look, their numbers were all about 2-1. 2-1 in shot attempts, 2-1 in shots, 2-1 in expected goals. Like, that's what you were getting from that line yesterday. That's exactly what you would want to get from that line. If you're going to say, we're going to trust you to play a lot in the third period, go and show us what you've got. And I think that the results were there. The results were there. Yes, you know, you see a J.J. Peterka goal. And Peterka with Quinn and Cousins was even better when you look at the numbers. In about 5 minutes of ice time, their shot attempts were 14-2. Like, that was better than the Thompson line. But I'm just saying, you had an opportunity to say, we're going well. We just need to tweak things to try to get a goal. You get the Peterka goal, you get the Tuck goal, and obviously the Jokiharju goal. That was all Lindy Ruff needed as a validation of his tweaking of the lines in the third period was working.
And what we saw in totality for the game was basically 8 different line combinations at 5-on-5. And when you just talked about the two lines, which were the Thompson line and the Cousins line. That left Jiří playing some time with Zucker and McLeod, and what basically stayed intact last night was Benson with Krebs and Malenstein. But it wasn't just, and if you were watching, I mean, you would have recognized yet again, eventually,
yep.
Because you talked about this after two, and it hadn't happened specifically in that period, but the engagement by Buffalo's defense and the offensive mindedness. Well, what we saw last night was, of course, Dahlin and Byram stay together, but then there was the third period change that saw more of Joki Haru with power and thus Gilbert with Samuelson. And both of those pairs, like everybody else on the team last night, had really good analytics because they blew Anaheim out of the water from a shot attempt standpoint. Yeah. The Ducks do rank 30th in that regard, so it's not an enormous surprise. What was a surprise was that Anaheim did fritter away the lead because they've been pretty good at holding it after two periods of play. So I think this is really relevant based on our brief chat last night on the post game about Power and Joki Haru, what they produced, but also moving forward, because Marty, to no one's surprise, the pairing that has been on the ice together the most this year by a landslide is Dahlin and Byram.
Yes.
But the second highest, third highest, and fourth highest pairs and time on ice all feature Owen Power.
Yeah.
He has spent over 200 minutes with Samuelson, with Joki Haru, and with Byram. And among pairings that have played north of 200 minutes together, Power and Joki Haru have allowed the fewest goals against. And yet last night, we're talking about them being plus three in that period, driving, helping to drive the offense and being on the ice for three goals.
Well, what it does too is we all know that the lefty-righty has been a discussion when it comes to the defense pairing. Dahlin and Byram, they don't seem to have any problems. And there was a couple of... I like the chemistry that they're building together now. And obviously, we've seen some of the best hockey Rasmus Dahlin has played all season long. The game against Nashville before the Four Nations face-off break. The game against the Rangers after that. But it's the chemistry and the partnership that those two have. Like, Byram was coming back towards the zone with the puck one time. Dahlin switched to the other side, like, given an option. That option wasn't there. He quickly pivoted, went back to the left. Like, they are so good now at reading off of one another. But I think when you don't play with somebody all that often, like, Owen Power has had, as you mentioned, many different partners, right? So you don't have the same foundation with anybody else because you're like, hey, you know what? I play 10 games with somebody, then I play 10 games with somebody else. It changes it a lot. And there's been injuries. But when you come in and Power is a lefty, Henry is a righty, and you put them together, it simplifies things because we don't have to worry about, do I go to the right now? Are you on the left? And like we don't have to crisscross over. It becomes simple. Look at Henry on his goal. He comes down the right side. Why? Because he was the right D on the right side. Right before that, Owen Power had a chance on the left side because he's the left D on the left side. Like, that's what you're getting, and it simplifies things. Now, I feel like it happened a little bit out of a kind of a weird moment. Like, Dennis Gilbert was on the ice for 4 seconds on a shift with Henry Joki Haru. And then he came to the bench to change. Power went on the ice. Boom, they scored the first goal. And after that, like, you look at, you know, you're probably Lindy Ruff, and you're like, hey, we had Power and Joki Haru on the ice? Yeah, let's give them another shift. Boom, they get on the ice. Like, they scored three goals in their first five shifts together. And you're like, well, we're not taking them apart. No, at the end of the game with the goalie pulled, we saw Samuelson and Power together, but in a different role. But I would expect tomorrow in Carolina, we're going to see what we saw at the end of the game. We're going to see Thompson with Green Wind Tuck. We're going to see, Samuelson with Gilbert and Power with Joki Haru. I think you're going to start that way. Why? Because it worked, and it gave you exactly what you wanted to get in the third period.
Interesting. Would you expect any change on the blue line? Meaning like Samuelson and obviously like Gilbert's been in more regularly here. That's left Clifton and Bryson on the sidelines. And it's interesting because outside of those four pairings that I mentioned that have had the most time on ice together this year, with three of those pairings featuring Power, then the next pairing that has spent the most time together is Clifton and Bryson at close to 200 minutes. So, again, they've carried eight all year. Obviously, the statistics show us that Power and Jokiharju have played together a fair amount. I'm just really interested, and that's why I let in the way I did. Yes, last night in the third period was nice because they were on the ice for 3-4. But what's more impressive is the fact they've only been on the ice for 6 against. And when you continue to look at where Buffalo has been from a goals against standpoint, Marty, this has been, for all the fun and offense that we've been talking about, and I've been trying to hype more and more, you are consistently focused right now on defensive plays, typically, posture, whatever, in our in-game analysis and right here on Sabres Live. So I think Power and Jokiharju deserve some credit for having a really low number. Well, the best low number out of any pairing that's played more than 200 minutes together this year.
A lot of
the
it
Sabres.
Is about puck possession, about being in the offensive zone, and I think they've done a great job in quickly transitioning, right? You go back, get the puck, transition quick, and then spend time in the offensive zone. That's how that pairing has been able to keep the numbers the way that they have been. You saw that yesterday. Even, you know, after the second period, we showed the time of possession in the offensive zone. And the Sabres had an edge, but I felt like they should have had a much bigger edge because of how often they had the puck. I just didn't think they were aggressive from the tops of the circles down in the offensive zone. Well, what happened in the third period yesterday? They were extremely aggressive from the tops of the circles down, shot from the goal line, plays around the net, rebound, redirection, backdoor plays. Like, man, that probably could have been a 6-goal third period yesterday if it hadn't been for Lucas Dostal in net. But to go back to Power and Jokiharju, for me, I think Henry Jokiharju has a ton of confidence now, having had a chance to play and score and have some success individually at the Four Nations faceoff. Build off of that. Build off of the confidence. I know how a player feels when they're not playing. And this has been hard. 8 defensemen. You have 25% of your guys not playing on any given night. Yeah. Right? That's hard.
It's a big number.
But that's a big number. But when you get in and you're feeling good like this, and it's fitting with somebody like Power, and it was fitting with Gilbert before that. Like, they were playing well together. There's no reason right now to make a change. And I get it. It's hard for Clifton and Bryson. But you continue making that push forward. And just quickly, I looked at the sheet this morning. I just wanted to bring it up in front of me.
Which sheet would that be?
The game sheet. The game sheet that never... when I talk about the sheet, I talk about the game sheet. Excuse me. But the Sabres at 35...
You're a big curling enthusiast too. So, you know, I worry
about... Yeah, the sheet of ice, the curling sheet, the whole... Yes. The Sabres had 35 shots on goal. In a normal game this year where the Sabres have had 35 shots on goal, I would have said about 30% of those shots would have come from the blue line, would have come from the defense. Because a lot of their play in the offensive zone was get it to the point, get it on net. Get it to the point, create chaos, get it on net. Sabres had 4 shots from the defense yesterday. It was the forwards that led the way. Yeah, you had...
Well, Byram must have had all 4 then, because...
Byram had 2. Jokiharju had the 1 on the goal, and Power had 1. That was your shots from the blue line yesterday in the game.
I'm going to ask for a review, just like the one Dahlin got the other day, to give him a 4th point of the game against the Rangers. It felt like, from my vantage point, that Byram had more. And maybe some of them didn't get through, but it was amazing to watch him generating from that position. So
Byram was said to have 5 shot attempts in the game.
Yep, that's, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right.
Well, You should reinforce the number you threw at me in spontaneous trivia on the postgame last night, for anybody that missed it.
Which was?
High danger chances?
Oh, high danger chances in the third period at 5-on-5
yesterday. No, totality of the game. Remember the ratio? Yeah,
9-1 in the third, 16-1, 5-on-5 for the Sabres yesterday.
Amazing.
But my point with the whole thing is that I felt like yesterday there was a click in the change of how we are going to create goals. Mm-hmm. It was in the third period, it became, let's work down low. Let's use our forwards to work down low. We haven't seen that often this season. When you look at the shots on goal by the forwards, Cousins at 4, Quinn at 3, Thompson at 7, Peterka 3, Tuck 5. Like, if you get those numbers mm-hmm. from your top six, they average 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shots on goal at the end of the night. You're going to get the third period you did. You're going to get 3 goals in 20 minutes, and you're going to get those type of chances that you did against Anaheim.
So you said your hunch is that we're going to see the game tomorrow start in similar fashion to how it ended as far as pairings and lines. Today was optional in their skate before they head to Raleigh. So, but the Canes, by the way, I mean, they're just a absolute mess right now. You could have fun stringing together a lot of Rod Brind'Amour post-game comments here over their last 6 games, which has produced 5 losses. And in those 5 losses, they have only scored 6 goals. They were shut out in Montreal last night. And so the irony in all of this is they acquired the best player in the deal back with Colorado last month. And I know our friend Shayna Goldman at The Athletic and, you know, that outlet recently had kind of profiled, you know, whether Rantanen is a good fit. And obviously there's, and Shayna expressed this last week, like there's a lot of things that are going right. It's just, at the end of the day, a casual fan and quite frankly, anybody within their organization is going to go, we're not getting the results right now. Like, what's happening? And so very quickly, like, what would you expect here from Carolina tomorrow? We all know it's been really hard for Buffalo to win in that building for the majority of the last decade, but like, what are you thinking here as far as what we could see from Carolina, what the impact or lack thereof has been from Rantanen, what his future might be with the organization?
So Carolina had won 6 of 7 at the end of January, and they've only got 1 win in February. Now, I get it. They've only played 6 games, but it's the way they've lost games. 4-0 mm-hmm. to Montreal, 6-3 to Toronto, 3-0 to Winnipeg. Like, they've not looked good in games. And that... So there's 2 things we can see out of Carolina tomorrow. Either Rod Brind'Amour is going to have them come out flying, and you're going to see that, or it's going to be a little bit of the same as Carolina is searching for an identity right now. They are a team that every year we've been saying they probably could use a superstar, right? They probably could use somebody that will put them over.
That's why they got Gensel last year.
They got Gensel. It didn't work. The year before that, it was
not his fault.
No, I know, exactly. The year before that, it was Pacioretty was injured. He ruptured his Achilles, and then they lost him. But that was the guy they were hoping was mm-hmm. going to put him over the top. And the same thing with Mikko Rantanen right now. I almost feel like Rod Brind'Amour, as good as a coach as he is, has a hard time being able to handle that. Rod Brind'Amour was not a superstar himself. He was a hardworking team guy that kind of like elevated his status to being one of the best in the league, but from the competitive nature that he had and a working nature that he had. And that's what his teams have always looked like. You know, you put them on the ice, they 1 through 4 lines, they work. How do you handle having a guy that has that much talent and maybe sometimes as a shift or two that doesn't look right, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's the nature of being that good. So I feel like he's having a hard time handling that. He's having a hard time handling that elevated status of those type of guys. Now, he has superstar in Aho and Svechnikov, but they were there from the beginning. It's different when you're in an organization like Carolina from the beginning or when you come in from the outside and you've already got a base as to how you play.
For our potentially our younger audience that didn't have the opportunity to follow Rod Brind'Amour's career, I think you're right in obviously you're right. When are you ever wrong?
No, you're wrong.
Yeah, I don't think I've said, well, maybe I have said. Anyway, the point is, through the hard work, I mean, Brind'Amour did end up being one of the top point producers in NHL history. Like, he's just shy of 1,200 points for his career.
Yes.
In just shy of 1,500 games played. So there has long been, you know, the push, the belief that Brind'Amour was a Hall of Famer. We'll save that for another day. But the last night, yet again, and this was last year too, and probably many of the years, it's like, everyone that goes to Carolina ends up with great underlying numbers. Yes. Because their disparity in shots for and against is always plus, plus, plus. Mm-hmm. Last night, the shots were 20 to 18. So for in favor of the road team, Carolina. So yet again, despite Carolina's goaltenders end most seasons way ahead on the win-loss side, right? They give up so little that their goaltenders, like, it ends up looking like a terrible night for Freddie Anderson. He gave up four on 18 shots.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
the shots were 20 to 18 at the end of the game. Like, it was a very low event game.
So the oddity is that Carolina continues to rank highly in goals against average, last night notwithstanding, and low in save percentage. And I don't know how they massage that in the middle of the conversation that we're continuing to have from your vantage point, where they have to find a way to score even more. And Marty, their off-season acquisitions, to say they've paid off handsomely from a goal-scoring and point production standpoint would be an understatement. Like, it was one of the talking points in the first half of the season, for sure. Like, Roslovic coming in, Eric Robinson coming in, and the depth. But you're right. Like, they still needed that super, in their eyes, that superstar presence. And in the short term here, it has not been figured out by their forwards.
Yeah, no, the top forwards definitely have to figure it out. And you're right. Like, earlier in the year, it was like the Eric Robinson. We're like, where has Eric Robinson's skill level, like, risen up to? Like, Eric Robinson was an honest player with the Sabres, somebody that was on your fourth line, but was getting so many opportunities, and the results were there. And Roslovic, but again, it's the Carolina Hurricanes. It's how you can win games with using all four lines and all 12 forwards and the defense, right? That usually get involved in the offense as well. Now, quickly, because I know we're going to have to take a break, and maybe we think about this in the commercial break, is because you're going to need all 12 forwards and your four lines to be able to take part and play a hard game tomorrow in Carolina. What if you gave Jiří Kulík a night off and say, you know what, like, you got banged up, we'll give you a night off. We're going to play Benson with Zucker and McLeod, and we're going to insert Lafferty with Krebs and Malenstein. And then, you know, because I don't think you want to go down to having to go down to three lines against Carolina in a game in Carolina where you don't have matchups, right? So that may be the one change I would make if I'm the Sabres tomorrow, depending on how Jiří feels after today and tomorrow morning's, like, you know, optional skates.
Interesting to chew on for sure. Again, Sabres had optional today, and both Carolina and Buffalo back in action tomorrow as they clash in Raleigh. We are just over a week away from the Sabres Road Crew event in Fort Lauderdale, and can't wait. It does fall on the exact same day as trade deadline. Sabres.com/Road Crew. Incredible list of alumni that will be there. Don Edwards, Danny Gare, among those who will be in attendance. This, if you're unfamiliar with our Sabres Road Crew past, typically we do one of these a year. Some years there's been more, but every NHL market across this league has still, even though some fans have moved away decades ago, there are passionate Buffalo fans all across this country. This is why we do this. We bring them together. It is a celebration of the game and obviously an opportunity for longtime Sabre fans and even recent ones to rub shoulders with some of the organization's great. So I can't stress enough how fun these events are on an annual basis. I look forward to seeing you all there. Tickets are just $20, sabres.com/road crew. We'll chew on Marty's thoughts and come back after this on Sabres Live.
Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Behind the curtain of live broadcasting. Marty, this was yet another moment where I was unprepared for the return to the airwaves. Just like last night.
We just have a big clock on our screen that tells us when we're coming back.
Yeah, but the problem is we all live in a world with multiple tabs.
Yes, and then we kind of do research and we forget that, oh, we're in commercial break and it's coming up.
So last night.
Yeah, you want to go around the league last night a little bit? Because there's 12
no,
games.
No, I want to tell people how unprepared or caught off guard I was.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, let's tell the behind the scenes of what happened pregame.
Anybody that goes to the game that, you know, has the opportunity to interact with it, like, it's amazing. Like, we love chatting with people, but they see where we are, what we're doing, when we're going through rehearsal, and the timing of everything, right? And usually we get through our rehearsal around like 10 after 6, and then for me, it's just kind of frantically dotting some I's and T's and being ready for the bottom of the hour at 6:30. And I had just told you less than 10 minutes earlier that my routine yesterday was off, like, for the best reason. I was, you know, spending a mid-afternoon lunch with my daughter and, like, just enjoying the day, right? But then when I got to the rink, I was realizing, like, I haven't prepared the same way, and everything felt off. And so my head was so far down in preparation that I didn't tell you this, but, like, when the players came onto the ice
for warm-up, yeah,
and warm-up began, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, is this like a rehearsal or something?
And because you...
And then I looked at the clock, and it was past 6:29. And yeah. I'm like, are we on? Like, and then I hear Joe in my ear, like 30 seconds. And I'm like, oh, my God.
What are we talking about?
What am I going to say?
What are we doing?
Not that you don't know that, you know, kind of obviously you've just been through rehearsal at some point in the last hour. So you kind of know what's going. But I was just like, holy cow, did that ever sneak up on me? And then you proceeded to tell me about your lack of readiness as well.
Dude, yours, at least you had your equipment on. And if worse comes to worse, they would have said, cue, Duffer, cue. And you would have been like, well, Sabres are playing an NHL team tonight. No, no, wait, where is it? Anaheim. And yes, it is here in Buffalo. And welcome in. Like, you would have at least been able to have said something on the air.
I faked it for over 30 years is what you're saying. I would have figured it out. Yes.
I saw your reaction because our backs are turned to the ice. So when the players take the ice, there's a big horn and the music starts. And you know that warm up is starting because we're just about to go on the air. We're usually with our backs turned. I looked over to you. You kind of gave me the stare like, oh my gosh, like, they're on the ice. Warm up has started. Like, you had that little bit of panic in you, which was so funny. I'm feeling really good. I'm standing there like, hey, I'm prepared. I know what we're doing. We have a special guest in the second segment. I already know what we're going to talk about. I'm all good. You start talking. Welcome in, Sabres Night. And I realize something's not right. I'm missing something. I didn't have my microphone on. I had put it, like, I had my earpiece in and I was listening, but I had put the microphone off to the side when I put my jacket on because I didn't want to get all tangled. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, something's not right, like, last second. And while we're showing Tage Thompson with his 24 goals at even strength, third in the National Hockey League, I'm putting my mic on over my ears, the whole thing. And I hope the guys in the truck, like our crew that's in the control room truck or whatever, mm-hmm. notice how frantic I was trying to put it all on. But that's how it started. I thought I was so ready. And it's like that dream where everybody that has played sport have had that dream. If it is baseball or hockey or basketball or football, where you're like, the game's about to start, but you can't seem to be able to get to the field or get to the ice because your skates are breaking up, your pads are not, you can't find your mask or your mm-hmm. helmet, or, like, there's always that dream that you can't get there. I felt so prepared, but it was like the dream. I almost didn't get to the broadcast because I didn't have my microphone on.
The nightmare more than a dream, right?
You wake up in a sweat. I'll tell you this. Yes. I've had that nightmare multiple times for multiple reasons. And I can still vividly remember some of those reasons why I didn't make it on the ice. Like, okay, Marty, warm up. Let's go. And I opened the door and it's outside. And I'm like, how do we get to the ice? And I opened a bunch of doors and there's no ice. There's no arena. It's like a locker room outside. Like, it's just so weird.
We have now lowered the bar for producer Jeff as to how we will deliver from studio tomorrow night in our road pregame show against Carolina. I can't wait. This is amazing. So
if that was Rob Ray, he'd be blaming everybody else, right? Like, he blames everybody else for taking the puck to the face and all of that. Mm-hmm. And only Razor would have this happen. He takes a puck to the face, right? So he's got to pay attention. He's in between the benches. So now we make this big thing about how he's going to be sitting at 300 level because he's as far away from the ice. And then he's saying, I'm hungry. Somebody better bring me food. So what do we all do? I brought him food. Sports services brought him food. Fans brought him food. Like, he won. He won the night by himself because he was getting so much food in the 300 level that, he had an extra dinner, let's just say.
He's a former Amerik. The Amerks are in action tonight at home in a big matchup against Wilkes-Barre. They will not have Brett Murray due to illness. Devon Levi will start. He's the reigning AHL Player of the Week. He's coming off consecutive shutouts. And the Amerks are trying to improve to 11-2 in their last 13. They're up against a Wilkes-Barre team that soundly won in the first meeting this year between the two of them. So if you're, again, have the opportunity, I would encourage you to get to Blue Cross Arena tonight in Rochester to see this one unfold. They've got this one and one more in the month of February, which has been so good for them so far. We documented in great detail over the course of the weekend how the teddy bear toss unfolded in the shootout win against Toronto. So again, Amerks in action tonight against Wilkes-Barre. Last night was busy, to say the least. A dozen games in the NHL. It's not about the result, obviously, as the Capitals lost. It is for them, but of course, they lost in regulation for the second time in the last 21. But in the loss, where they scored only one goal, of course, it was Alex Ovechkin with his 30th goal of the season. He is now 12 goals shy of breaking the Wayne Gretzky all-time goal-scoring record, and he extended his own record for most 30-goal seasons in NHL history. He is up to 19 of those, and dare I say, counting.
I mean, most players in the National Hockey League would love to play 19 seasons in the NHL. Ovechkin's got 19 years of 30 goals, and two of those years were shortened season, right? There was a COVID shortened season, a lockout shortened season. So it's amazing. Now, his goal was interesting because I'd have to ask him the question, were you trying to shoot or were you trying to pass to Tom Wilson, who was in front of the net, or did you get caught in between? Because it almost feels like he got caught in between what he wanted to do. The goaltender, Vladar, got caught in between because he was not in a position to make the save. Vladar was great. Here's a key stat. Yesterday, I mentioned that Anaheim was blocking a lot of shots, that Anaheim was second in the National Hockey League in averaging over 17 block shots per game. The Calgary Flames yesterday blocked 29 shots in the game in front of Dan Vladar. Like, that's why they ended up winning 3-1. Vladar was good, but Calgary blocked 29 shots in the game.
I'll try to rapid fire through this and then allow you to highlight which are the biggest stories. Columbus, top five offense in the NHL, was able to win again. They put up six against Dallas. Boston lost for the fourth straight time. They have two wins in the last eight, and they blew a big lead against Toronto and then another smaller lead in the game's final minute, only to lose in overtime. Philadelphia's won three in a row. Pittsburgh's lost four in a row, giving up 22 goals in the process. The Flames, with their two-game winning streak, have started their six-game road trip in fashion where they are, you know, right there for wild card in the West. Tampa's won six in a row. The Oilers have lost four in a row despite Draisaitl scoring in six straight games. He's got 43 on the year, but their coach, Chris Knobloch, says they are a fragile group right now. Wow.
Yes.
Hard to believe with the Edmonton Oilers. They've given up 17 goals in the last three games. The Islanders have lost four in a row. The Rangers have won two in a row. Detroit is 9-1-1 in their last 11. After coming back from a 2-0 deficit against Minnesota last night to win the game in regulation 3-2. And Florida has won three of the last four. Sam Bennett making his typical physical and goal-scoring impact, as he is the reason why Roman Josi is not on the ice today and left the game early. We'll start with Josi and the Bennett play. Immediate reaction when you first saw it.
Immediate reaction, I felt, was an unfortunate result for Roman Josi. I didn't think it was that bad on the Bennett side. And the reason why I'm saying it is because, first of all, Bennett, if he wanted to, could have crushed him like a full body on Josi. But, and I know this is looking at it after multiple replays, Bennett has to go around Colton Sissons to try to get to where the scrums is in the corner. And I think last second, he kind of changed a little bit of his angle. He made a little bit of a right turn and bumped Josi with the right arm, forearm in the back. It's a bad play. It's a boarding penalty. I don't anticipate any supplemental discipline coming towards Bennett because it's an unfortunate result. Like it wasn't as forceful as I have seen some of these moments happen in the past.
Okay. Through all the other things that I just mentioned, what really stands out for you right now?
Okay. Patrick Waugh, when talking about Ilya Sorokin last night, he said, it was a weird game. A lot of deflections, a lot of puck bouncing everywhere.
He's not wrong,
but he did finish by saying, he was also, Ilya didn't have a good night. And I have to say this because if I didn't, you guys would all say I'm full of eh. So it was kind of funny because he's like, he knows as a goalie that some nights the puck is not going to bounce your way. But as a coach, you also have to say, not his best night. So that was interesting. You talk about Columbus. Kirill Marchenko with two goals last night. He's playing with the jaw protection because he got a broken jaw while sitting on the bench, earlier in the season. And he was unbelievable. And Dallas kept coming back and coming back. And it was a great, but Columbus had a huge PK at the end of the second. They were shorthanded for 4 minutes and it was a 4-3 game at that moment. Mm-hmm. And they had quick starts. They scored 30 seconds into the first period, a minute into the second period, and 2.5 minutes into the third period. That's how Columbus got themselves going. And what else do I want to talk about? Oh, Toronto. Like, Boston, come on. I get it. Boston's a playoff race right now, but you're up 3-0 in a game at home. That should be lockdown city. They not only allowed Toronto to come back, but Marner, dead tired in overtime. You know, he's like, I'm going to take that breakaway. And I still wonder what Swayman was doing. Maybe Marner
slow. Exactly what Swayman was doing. It took Marner a little bit of time to catch up to the puck. Yep. Swayman initially reacted like, should I go? And then he ended up leaving way too much room for Marner to just deke him, right?
He was flat-footed and just ended up doing the splits, right? Like, for me, it would have been a snow angel because I couldn't do the splits. But, yeah, he was so flat-footed. Marner gave him the shoulder shimmy, though, because Marner's so tired. He's like, I got to give him a move. It was almost a too obvious of a move, and Swayman bit on that move so hard, and he walked around him. Stolarz, he hung in there. It wasn't the best of game, but he's still, in my opinion, the guy that Toronto's going to rely upon when they get to the playoffs this year.
Binnington, speaking of goaltenders, 4-0-1 in his last five. The Blues are 3-0-1 in the last four as they threw up a touchdown against Seattle. And I just want to put a bow on Werenski before we break. This was another night where Columbus scored 6 goals at home. But Zach Werenski's incredible third best in NHL history home point streak by a defenseman ended despite the fact they scored 6 goals last night. So that means that his streak ends at 22 straight home games where he had a point. He had 41 points over those 22 home games. Unbelievable from the defense position. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres and Bills joining forces next Tuesday. That's March the 4th. First 10,000 in attendance to receive a Squish the Fish rally towel. Sharks are in town that night. Bills personalities will be present along with giveaways, games, much more. Last night, a Tuesday game was a lot of fun. We hope to have the same type of environment and then some next Tuesday when the Sharks roll in. That leads me to Sharks Hawks. We don't have time for spontaneous trivia. I just wanted to bottom line it that the Hawks have 5 wins in their last 25 games. The Sharks have 5 wins in their last 31.
Yeah.
So that means like 10 wins combined least, in the last 66 games.
Yeah, but I feel like the Sharks at least are like fighting through and at least like 1-0 to Winnipeg, then they lose to 1 in OT. Like at least they're pushing. Chicago seems like they're not giving much these days and it's hard to watch. Okay. Carolina, Montreal, San Jose, right? The next 4. We talked about, you know, getting 6 in a row before the deadline. Well, that's 1 down. So now we got 5 to go. And I think the next 4 are very, very gettable. Like, Montreal's a really good team right now. They've figured it out. And, you know, Slafkovský, the top line, is playing well. That's over the weekend, Carolina tomorrow. But you can go on and win the next 4, which will have meant that you would have won 6 in a row coming back from the Four Nations face-off break.
Have you seen Michael Bolton in concert?
No, but I celebrate his entire catalog.
As he turns 72 on this day. We'll see you tomorrow. It's a game day on Sabres.